Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Doubters. On Thursday, the 30th of July, in a fairly sunny England, and my guest here today is joining us from Paris, and is Duncan McLachlan. I'm never very good at pronouncing surnames. I must get this right. Duncan, how is it in Paris today?
It is actually very hot today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're sending an awful weather our way. I don't like the sunshine, but let's not get into that. I prefer the rain. Anyway,
we didn't get your rain, actually.
Yeah, we're getting your sunshine. It's coming our way. This is, I can't bear it. Anyway, so you're joining us in Paris, and it's really great to have you here. Thanks for joining us today. Right, so how this will work, we've got a few people joining us live here. I'm going to introduce Duncan in a moment, tell you a little bit about what the Doubters is about and what to expect. And then at about 20 to the hour, I'm going to open up anybody who wants to come in and ask a question or make a contribution or anything you want to say at that point. Feel free to come on and join in at that point. But I will close off the recording at about 10 to the hour, and then we can leave a bit of time after the recording if you don't want to come on the recording, just to stick around and chat then and catch up. It would be really great to meet anybody who's here. So this is The Doubters. This is my private online community, and this is a space where I explore all the ideas related to this concept I've created around the purpose of self-doubt. So often I have a guest here, sometimes I'm on my own, but it's just really about exploring this. So this is an explorative space, and I really like to just have these conversations flow. We've got a topic, and our topic today is about being a positive change leader, but we haven't planned the conversation, and we're just going to explore this topic and see where it goes. And so I love to learn in this space. I always learn something, and I know that I'm going to get so much from Duncan today. I always get so much from speaking to you, Duncan, so it's a real pleasure to have you here. Okay, so yeah, I'm going
to
introduce.
Well, it's a super pleasure to be here, so thank you for the invitation.
Oh, no, it's lovely. So let me introduce you, Duncan. Duncan, you are a coach and a consultant, really working around diversity and inclusion, and you have a real passion for excellence and a real commitment to positive change. I know that you're also an advisory board member for the African Diversity and Inclusion Centre, so maybe you want to talk about your work a little bit, maybe not. I really like to introduce people through my connection with them, so I'll just introduce you like that. So really, you and I just connected on LinkedIn, weirdly. we were maybe following the same hashtags and influences around diversity and inclusion, and we just connected around a shared passion around this topic. And we got to talking, and you've been really supportive around my project and around the whole self-doubt stuff. And it's been really, that's really meant a lot to me. So it's a real pleasure to have you here, Duncan. I've always got so much from talking to you, as I said. Is there anything that you want to say just by way of introduction? Is there anything you want people to know about you?
I don't know about me. I just want to say welcome to everyone who's here now and who will be seeing this or part of it later. I really appreciate that. This is obviously strange times for everyone. And the fact that you're spending some time here, choosing to spend time here, is appreciated. And I'll do my best to add as much value to the time that we have as I can.
Yeah, wonderful. You're welcome. Thank you, Duncan. Thank you. Good. So we're going to explore really the topic of being a positive change leader. And, one of the reasons that I think you're so suited to this topic is because of your story and the background of where you come from. And I want to touch on that just before we really get into exploring, what a positive change is and how do we know we're creating positive change. So I'm just going to put it on to you. So I really, Duncan, you got a fairly significant diagnosis. Could you tell us about that time in your life? Because I think, just to touch on that, because it feels quite important to the background of what you're doing today.
Sure. And it's interesting that you chose the word diagnosis. I was infected with HIV in 1985, and in 1990 I got a diagnosis which was You've got 2 years to live.
Wow.
1990. So that really began for me what I could describe as the hero's journey, becoming the hero of my own life, meaning that at that time in 1990, there wasn't any significant treatment. And essentially, I felt as though all of the loss and people around me were actually dying because of the early medication that was available. It was very, very toxic. And I remember the moment of hearing this news from, I was sitting in my doctor's office when he made this pronouncement. And I remember feeling an incredible fear, right? First of all. Mm. And in the context of the following, you know, really seconds, it was almost right away, I just felt, okay, I'm not normal. I'm not, he was basing it on, as everyone else was at the time, the life expectancy. And then the life expectancy at that point, when the immune system was at that level, was death. And basically everybody died. So it was just a matter of when. And so I decided not to accept this death diagnosis. Somewhere inside of me, I knew that that was not my path. And I remember saying, because he insisted that I had to be taking the medication, and which I felt was killing my friends. And I remember walking out of there and saying, it's obvious to me that we can't work together. Mm. So that was the end of that relationship, but that was also meant that that was the end of a relationship with a family doctor. Mm-hmm. I had no more. I did not have, I had access to healthcare. I was living in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada at the time. But I didn't, I had no idea what the path forward was. I had no idea what the map was. There was tremendous, tremendous stigma. You know, one of the things that we see with COVID is that there's a disproportionate impact on marginalized populations, on people who are poor, on people who are oppressed, on people who are racialized. And that was true at the time as well. It hadn't, in 1990, it hadn't kind of burst forth into being, well, anybody can get it. There was tremendous stigma and tremendous fear. There was really no effective treatment, and there certainly was no cure, and definitely no vaccine. So just to kind of make some references to, you know, to today.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's an estimated, we think it's actually going to be higher, but about 750,000 people will die of AIDS this year.
Wow.
And it may be significantly higher because of the impacts of COVID. So coming back to my story. So that began this journey of self-discovery, so the inner journey, the outer journey, and I was able to create a map of life. I was able to create my own map for living.
Map for living. I mean, as you talk about it, I remember those times. You know, I was a teenager in the 90s. Yeah, it's a teenager in the 90s, and it was such a stigma, wasn't it? And like you say, it was a death sentence, really, and nobody really knew anything about this, and there was so much fear. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm hearing you saying is, you know, getting that diagnosis and the instance after it, actually the response to that was, no, this isn't my path. I'm not going to accept this. And of course you're here to tell the tale, because obviously you did, and obviously how you got over that, I mean, I guess is another story really for another time, but just to say that you are proof of that kind of will, I guess, for positive change and how you can make something happen against the odds.
Against the odds, yeah, exactly. And I think it was Marianne Williamson, I think, one of my teachers, she said, if one person can do it, then there's the possibility that two people can do it. I learned a lot about, I just went on this massive exploration and eventually connected with people. I built a community of support, because we all need that in any change that we're making. We need to have positive energy around us, especially when it's a significant life challenge. I started collecting stories and interviews with people who actually saw this for them as a spiritual journey, as well as a physical, pathological journey. And I think the notions of holistic health, the science in 1990, the science of psychoimmunology was fairly new. But I think today we understand that there are all these connections, you know, between mind and body. We talk about stress and you know, significant interplay between the physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, that sort of holistic whole approach to us as individuals is something that is at the heart of resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And much more common nowadays. And what you said there about what Marianne Williamson said, you know, if one person can do it, then other people can do it. And I think, you know, this is one reason why I think your story is so important to, you know, because lots of people, you know, people who listen to this, you know, probably may not have been around in those days, wouldn't remember it. So that's why that story is so important, and what the times were like now compared to what the times are now. And of course, you know, it's about facing a life challenge. And that can happen, you know, it happened for you in your diagnosis, and it can happen to any of us in any shape or form, and it can come unexpected, or we can invite these things to happen. But it's about really, like you say, having that resilience to be able to approach these challenges of life.
And, you know, and everybody has challenges, and I've had a whole series of them. Being an AIDS thriver, I suppose, as opposed to just an AIDS survivor, you know, is still pretty big. That used to really get a lot of attention, you know, when people would say, you had AIDS? How is that possible?
Yeah.
So it is powerful, but everybody has, you know, has challenges in life. And I think we're all dealing with additional challenges today in terms of anxiety, in terms of you know, uncertainty, in terms of, you know, what is the future. I mean, the it's you know, it used to be the fine print, you know, subject to change.
That's it's like the headline,
right? The headline, subject to change. We can't plan anything with certainty, you know, whether we want to be seeing our grandchildren, or whether we want to be, you know, in my case, you know, flying to Canada to see my parents, or just it's complicated, or we can't do it, or it's social distance. It's all of a sudden, I think everything changed. I think we all came into this experience with a whole bunch of ideas about, you know, our world and our place in it, and with our families and our communities and our countries and our cultures, etc. And now it's all about, we have exponential change and we have uncertainty everywhere we look. And so when people talk about, you know, resilience in a traditional way, we talk about, you know, bouncing back, you know, like as if we could return to where we were. And that's also kind of blown out the window, really, because there isn't a way to go back to where we were, and where we were wasn't really working so well for a lot of people. If we think about inequality, if we think about Black Lives Matter, if we think about the planet, you know, the crisis of the planet. And so I think that the resilience that I, the practices, resilience practices that I had to develop in the face of feeling at the beginning alone in the world, there was no one that believed in me. So I had to believe in myself. And wow. I think that fundamentally, that is the essence of our strength. That is the essence of our resilience. That is the essence of, you know, that is the well from which, you know, everything springs forth.
Can I just ask you,
yeah.
Duncan, you know, where did you find that belief? You said nobody believed in me. I mean, I can imagine what a isolating, when you say that nobody believed in me, that hits me here, you know, yeah. It's like, oh, the isolation of that.
Yeah.
Where did you find that belief in yourself?
Well, it's inside all of us.
Yeah.
So it's not so much a question of finding it. It's a question of discovering.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, of course. And connecting
then,
with it.
Yeah. Right. And there's so many different ways of doing that. And I had a really privileged position. And I mean, I had to stop working. I was very sick. There was all kinds of stuff going on with an AIDS diagnosis, believe me. But I began this quest, this search, and it took me to, I mean, just think of any kind of, you know, complementary alternative therapy, whether it was traditional Chinese medicine or whether it was Reiki and energy work, whether it was nutritional supplementation, whether it was building lean muscle mass because of wasting. Mm-hmm. There was this need to kind of, you know, that because there was a tendency to keep losing weight, that, you know, trying to work out and I went 19 years without any allopathic or pharmaceutical kind of treatment. So all of those things worked in the totality, and in the context of meditation and mindfulness and reading, you know, sacred literature and yoga and all of these things, I got to know myself.
And you know what you're saying here about being faced with that, what I'm hearing is, and what I love about these stories and your story in particular, is that, you know, would you have done this stuff if you'd not had the diagnosis? And you're talking about resilience, and there's a concept I think we've spoken about before, which is anti-fragility, which is mm-hmm. Nassim Taleb. I've spoken about it here before, yeah. But the anti-fragility, the concept of that is actually the we don't break, we become stronger. Mm-hmm. So, you know, would you have sought all of those solutions and that, you know, all that kind of network and connection of solutions if you hadn't have had that diagnosis, and also what all of that exploration has brought to your life over and extra what you had before, you know?
Well, I used to, it's a great question. There's different answers to it. So, but the short answer is I'd like to think so, but it would have taken a lot longer.
Would you have had that? But you don't have the same motivation.
Exactly. So, you know, here we are, and all of a sudden, you know, we have motivation to change because, goodness, you know, we have to. I mean, it's when people talk about working from home, for example, it's usually in the context of being forced upon, right? It's not like, I mean, now some people are discovering that it's great, and some people are, I can't wait to, you know, not have the kids around, but, you know, whatever it is, right? So for me, I always, particularly about something like yoga, I mean, not everything I tried, I stayed with, right? I mean, it's an exploration. So that's the opportunity to discover. Mm. So it's being curious about you know, about the journey and about these other ways of it actually ties into diversity, because it's really about there's other ways of looking at health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Chinese perspective, the traditional Chinese perspective on health is very different from ours. Mm-hmm. It's all about energy flows and too much heat and too little heat. And they could treat something like an HIV infection based on, you know, thousands of years of practice, even though it wasn't based on history with HIV. It was about systems, right? Similarly, I had a, in 1995, I had a whole series of amazing magical opportunities with Indigenous teachers, normally not very privileged, normally not accessible to white people. And it was, and I had and I had exposure to that, and I had a major, meaning like all night, healing ceremony in Dearborn, Michigan in 1995. And I mean, they saw HIV very, very differently. And so, you know, so there's these different ways of looking at, you know, at health and fundamentally at the world. And so, like, I'm all about that to start with, for a whole bunch of reasons. I'm all about that. So I think I would have been interested, but not in the totality of everything that I explored, because I didn't have that motivation, because there wasn't an urgency. I mean, literally, like, I was really aware that the clock was ticking, right? And the consequence over time was, in fact, that, you know, that the markers of my immune system, I didn't have a family doctor for quite a few years, but I got tested and checked and stuff. And, you know, my immune system was going like this, you know. So I think that those things, it really pushed me to explore and make a practice of things that are important to me, that are necessary. And how do I know that? Because I still do them today.
Yeah, exactly.
However, the other part of that is that when I started taking the treatment, meaning the pharmaceutical treatment, or allopathic as opposed to homeopathic, allopathic medicine, a lot of it fell away once my immune system began to reconstitute. So I didn't keep all of it because, again, the urgency wasn't there.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a yes and no answer. I'm sorry, but
And I guess the reason I'm sort of asking that is because the reason I love working with self-doubt is because, you know, we're inviting that challenge of uncertainty in. We're inviting that challenge of, I don't know, that space. I mean, maybe not to the extent that you were thrown into it, but it's about inviting that space of uncertainty and learning how to use that. Learning how to be in that, and if we can use it to motivate us towards practices, which I know it does for me, because I, you know, challenges I've experienced in my life have developed into practices that sustain my life today. And I'm not talking about you know, the stuff that you go and buy at the supermarket. I'm just talking about the stuff that I do on a day-to-day basis and I commit to, because I know that it makes me who I am. And I wouldn't do these if I didn't have the challenges I had.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. And I think with respect to self-doubt, I mean, it's important to say, you know, in the retelling of it, it's important to say that there was doubt all the time. I mean, through this journey, I it was all untried. And certainly at the very beginning, before I connected with other people who were doing the same thing, and in fact, in the early 90s, after 96, when there was a more effective treatment available for the first time, so for the first 5 or 6 years, actually, people didn't want to know. They didn't want to know that you were still alive, because how come you were alive and their partner was dead?
Yeah.
And there was so much collective grief in, you know, in the LGBTQ community at the time, that I hesitated there because we didn't call it that at the time.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as inclusive back then. It was just lesbian and gays.
But
at the time, there was this hostility to talking about it in public. So I felt as if I couldn't even disclose in my own community, right?
There's so many layers that you're dealing
You know, it's
survivor guilt maybe, and
but there's doubt all the time, and I think that, you know, I didn't realize until right now that really was an aspect of, you know, of each, in a sense, each time that I would go, I mentioned exploring, so I would something called therapeutic touch is another thing, and you know, that was when I was paying for an appointment, and I would go and I really wouldn't know. There wasn't the same internet access. You couldn't go and check the ratings of somebody, you know? So it was kind of like I really had to be in this place of, you know, curiosity and being inquisitive and just being open.
Wow.
And trusting my intuition, you know, led me to somebody who was going to, you know, be a benefit to me. And sometimes most of the time that was true, not always.
And I love how you said that, you know, because I think that's what I try to get to around the space of self-doubt is curiosity, openness, and trusting our intuition. You know, it feels like a real opportunity to connect with those parts. But so I just want to touch on, you know, what I'm hearing you saying with your background and the experience you've had, of course, you're perfectly placed to be, I talked about, you know, the power of example in my little synopsis. And I said, when it comes to positive change, you know, you are that example. And that's what I mean by it in today's environment with the particular challenges we're having now around COVID and around the diversity and inclusion challenges that's really brought to a head. I mean, it was going on anyway, but it's brought so much to a head that you feel like, you know, you can be that person who can stand up and say, hey, don't worry, I've been there, you know, and this is how you do it. And I think that's why I really wanted to get you on here, to really show that example to people, you know, who are feeling challenged by these particular stuff that's happening now.
I think the message that I want to give is if I had to think a lot about, okay, so why am I here? How come? Because I knew other people who were doing maybe not exactly what I would, you know, I mean, it's a very customized, you know, everybody's, you know, choosing their own path, but there were others who rejected. And I did finally, you know, meet up with, there was a tribe, if you will. And traveled around the province of Ontario collecting some of those stories. I think part of the meaning was that I meant to create a positive difference in the lives of other people. Okay. So I'll just say it. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being
there was a hesitation in saying that.
Well, it's a little more, I think it's a little more ambitious today, but it's because I think about adding value and, you know, I feel like everything, there's no time to waste, right? Yeah. I don't think there's any time to waste for all of this. But we're all the authors of our own story, and we're all the heroes of our own journey. And I actually have gone through a lot in terms of bullying and assault and addiction and mental health issues and marriage breakup and you know, family death and I mean, there's all of these things that we have to face in life are things that causes great pain and are great opportunities for learning. Mm. That's where we get to really connect with, you know, what matters, right? Who we really are. And one of the things that that you've taught me about self-doubt, which seemed counterintuitive to me at the beginning, was that, you know, if I was doubting something, because I still have self-doubt. I mean, you know.
Yay, great.
Of course.
You're
right?
Human.
Human and.
It's not about getting rid of it.
It's not. No, it's about welcoming it. And the more that you welcome it, you know, the more that you bring it to you, what you taught me is that, because I was curious, you know, with your kind of proposition around this, that I now understand, and because I practiced this, I now understand that self-doubt means that something is of great meaning to me. Otherwise, I wouldn't care.
Exactly.
So it's this idea of because before, you know, there would be a strong tendency to uncomfortable. It's you know, I'd rather feel good, you know.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
so welcoming, inviting self-doubt, understanding that as a motivator, and then taking action, I've discovered has released, you know, so much energy for positive change. And so there's more available to help other people, to you know, to be a better human being.
Wonderful. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what you're up to at the moment, because I know that you're studying. I know you're constantly studying and learning. That's one of the things, you know, a great passion for you. I know that. And as I said, you're really, really committed to making positive change. But what do you mean by that? And how do you go about positive change?
Positive change is moving from normal to extraordinary, or normal to exceptional, and you know, this idea that it ties back to this idea of bouncing back, actually, because, you know, bouncing back to normal. So what is normal anyway? And you know, now I'm starting to use
it's
the
a
term.
It's a setting on the washing machine, I think.
Maybe, right? it's. I'm just calling it the now normal, because part of the thing that I'm doing with clients and people is saying, okay, let's just, if we really want to open up, in terms of thinking about, you know, how do we build resilience and capacity, you know, if I'm working with someone one-on-one and on an individual basis, or whether it's a team or an organization. It's really about building capacity for the future, right? We want to be able to understand what we do well already. You know, what are our strengths when we're at our best? You know, what does that look like? Mm. And then from there, you know, reimagining how we can build off of those strengths and grow into something else. Reimagine. Our whether it's our work, or, you know, or part of our lives, or whether it's our teams or organizations, how can we work better together? How can we be more inclusive? Quite frankly, and so the idea of you know, of positive change is about resilience. It's about regeneration. So this ties into the notion of sustainability.
Yeah.
Like, we need to be able to, for ourselves, so like self-care, you know,
number
like
one.
There's a whole bunch of writing out, you know, and people talking about, you know, they were go, 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 and then all of a sudden they like hit the wall because they were just so busy doing, right? I think this happened to many of us. It happened to me. And so it's more, you know, focus on doing, but regeneration is if we think about ecosystems, so that means having, you know, redundancy. That means, you know, having capacity in a system to absorb shock.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of efficiency.
Well, I'm so glad that you raised that point, actually, because I'm becoming, I think, an anti-efficiency warrior. I spent so many years, especially when I was working in business, of running around and getting everything done. I was a little misefficient. I was like, if you gave me something to do, I would do it. I was very good at that stuff, but there was always a cost to that. And that was generally my peace of mind and my health and well-being. And that doesn't happen. I think I've gone so much the other way. You know, I'm a beekeeper and I love nature and I just take things. I'm a slow reader. If I listen to a podcast, I listen slowly. I'm constantly, you know, rewinding. Let me hear that bit again. Let me hear that bit again, you know. And I love that kind of slow pace of life. And for me, I don't think efficiency should be like a human quality. I don't think efficiency is machine-like, you know. Humans, we're not efficient. You know, the more we try to be efficient, the more it costs us, I think. So in fact, you talk about like room for capacity, room for redundancy, and all this stuff in the 90s especially was just like.
And, you know, when we talk about, so how do we know if it changes positive?
Yeah.
Well, one of the ways that we know is that we're adding life, we're adding energy, you know, into ourselves or into a system, right? And that capacity to add, and we all know this, like just intuitively know, you know, a certain situation or a person or a piece of work or our team or our boss or our organization, or, you know, do we feel energized by that experience?
Yeah.
You know? Or do we feel depleted and frustrated and demotivated and all the other things that go with it?
Yeah.
And so we know that we're making a positive change if we're adding energy to our lives.
Yeah.
If we're adding energy to other people's lives. And then from there to the world. I mean,
and that's where it starts to get exponential.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the efficiency. That's the type of efficiency, I guess.
Maybe it's a different kind of efficiency, but I think the notions of efficiency are, I think there have to be efficiencies in some systems. They think that right now we need to be able to think outside of the efficiency box, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really about adaptation. And positive change is about adding life and giving life so that you add more than you're taking away.
That is beautiful. Yeah. At the time now, I would like to invite anybody who is here to come on and ask a question, make a contribution. Just feel free to unmute yourself and put your camera on it if you would like to. We have a few people here. I know you've brought a couple of people along, Duncan, so that's great.
No, they brought themselves along.
They brought themselves along. Yeah, that's great. But you don't have to, you know, we can stick around afterwards. Obviously, we're on the recording. We can just carry on chatting. So we'll see if anybody wants to come on. So what else?
Well, you're asking about, you know, about current work and my propensity for studying. Because I'm so excited about learning and I think that there's so much to learn, and I think that there's so much to figure out for all of us. And what I try and do is in the writing that I do, is I try and distill that down a bit, you know, and offer some nuggets and perspective. So that's writing that I do on LinkedIn. That'll be expanding elsewhere. I'm wrapping up something very interesting. Reinvention. So reinvention is like taking resilience and building off of it to something even bigger. So reinvention generally has a connotation of something being bigger, but it's the same principles as resilience. Just and
expanded.
Yeah, and so the idea with this particular training, it's a certified reinvention practitioner, and so that's specifically helping again individuals and organizations to reinvent. And I'm getting a lot. I get a lot of questions about resilience. But it depends where you are. When I check in with my friends and colleagues in Canada, they say, "Yep, reinvention's trending. Like people are talking about it a lot." In France, here we use reinvent, réinventer, a lot. Mm-hmm. So I want to learn more about the systems and tools, particularly that are useful, both for personal and professional growth and development around reinvention, because I frankly think that, you know, we really do need to not just reimagine but actually reinvent some of the ways that we live and the way that we operate. And
we've been speaking about this a bit on here. I've spoken about this with a few guests actually, and the challenge of this is going into that space of unknown. Mm-hmm. And being in that space of discomfort, and not just with ourselves but as the system, you know, with teams and collectively into that system. And the challenge of that is, like, you know, we don't know if this is going to work out, but we can't if we don't allow that uncertainty, we're only going to be replicating what we've done before.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. And you know, there's this, I mean, this idea comes from, you know, comes from Agile and Scrum, if you know, from the management side of things, but you know, really what I was doing around, you know, trying to figure out my AIDS opportunity was I was piloting and testing.
I bet you never thought you'd say that.
Well, it's the first time I've said it, actually.
Okay.
There you go. So it was piloting and testing things, right? So we start small. Yes. We try something out, and we see if it works or not. Yeah. And so this is really how we operate in our lives, because we're not sure, and that's okay. It's okay not to be. It's okay to have self-doubt. It's okay not to be sure. It's okay for things to be uncertain.
Yeah.
We have to grow into this. It takes practice, and you know, and we were all kind of thrown into it, you know, with COVID. And now we're watching, as we record this, you know, we're watching this yo-yo thing happening, you know, or wave thing happening in different in different countries, and it looks more uncertain than ever, right? It wasn't like we got to go through this, you know, 2 months of confinement, as we call it in France, or lockdown, or you know, whatever, or 3 months, whatever the duration was, that strict, and then we can resume and we'll be okay.
Yeah,
no,
it's not going to happen.
It's coming in waves. Yeah. So that really has forced all of us, I think, to consider to varying degrees how we might, you know, reimagine our lives. Mm. You know? So you mentioned, you know, nature and beekeeping, and I really got much more reconnected and connected to nature than before, and that's an experience that a lot of both professional and personal relationships in terms of people have said that this happened for them too. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us to reimagine and reinvent, and obviously and to try new things and then to scale them up.
Well, nature's another great example of positive change and resilience and anti-fragility, all of these terms we're talking about.
In the Certified Reinvention Practitioner program, I discovered biomimicry.
Okay.
And biomimicry is using ecosystems as the study of ecosystems. So where you have adaptation and you have evolution and you have, you know, localized resources and you have sustainability and you have all of these elements are tools that can be applied to one's life. They can be applied to organizations. They can be applied to design primarily. So mm-hmm. when we start thinking about, you know, how do we design our lives to be more sustainable. And for some people that, I have a friend who just like, he's like, I'm retiring early. He's in the education system in Ontario. I'm retiring early. I've just bought a property in the country.
Wonderful.
You know, and I want to grow my own food and, you know, and I don't know if he's got to off the grid yet, but I mean, that's kind of where he's going.
Yeah, great.
And that's a radical move. But I think a lot of people are thinking about their lives differently. And how can we be more, within that framework of an ecosystem, how can we be more resilient? How can we be more regenerative? How can we be ultimately more sustainable for ourselves, for our communities, and for the world?
And I think you gave an excellent tip there, which is about the energy. Mm. Checking that energy. Is this energizing me or is this draining me? And knowing which to go for and when, you know, that takes a certain amount of wisdom. But, you know, I think there's definitely clues there.
Yeah, you know, a lot of that was a discovery that actually happened back in the 1990s. The work of people like Carolyn Mace and all the energy work. And when you feel that, when you feel that connection and you know, when we talk about auras, and there was a big kind of new agey thing, and that got very kind of, it was very kind of disparaged by some people. But within all that is truth. And part of how we connect with people is with the quality of our energy. And when we're doing that kind of energy assessment, there's a leadership resilience tool. I just wrote about it today, actually, on LinkedIn. And what I liked about it was that it has this breakdown, very much along holistic lines of, you know, physical, mental, emotional, and meaning, or I would say maybe, you know, spiritual, you know, purpose. And then, you know, questions within each of those realms. So it's not even just, you know, is it positive or negative energy, or you can actually drill down a bit more, especially when you're designing change, for the future, and you want to plan things out. You can look at, you can do a review, think of, you know, the last 6 months, or in this particular model, it's the last 12 months, and then pick a few key examples where you really felt that you were at your best, where there was flow, where, you experienced success. And so when you really focus in on those experiences where we have strengths, it's the strengths that we build off of. Mm. And the energy and the feeling around that, you know, so, you know, how do we feel when we're really embodying our strengths? How do we feel when we, when we meet self-doubt head on and say, okay, you know, I'm going to, you know, this is important to me. I need to pay attention to this, and I'm going to go for it. You know, I'm going to, you know, not just embrace it, but I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
And that creates, what I found is that approach to self-doubt has really been transformative, because it is something I talked about, you know, relieving energy, but it also reduces stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we have stuff sitting back there, you know.
Well, that's an energy drain, isn't it?
Maybe tomorrow. No, not today. I'm too busy today. it's just kind of there, and it is an energy drain, exactly.
So we've come up to time now, Duncan, and you know, if there's any final thoughts you want to add, but just let us know what you're available for and where people can find you. And actually, I will include, if it's okay, a link to that post that you were just talking about in the email, assuming it's in English. In French.
It is in English. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
great.
It's from the Noble Academy, which is.
That sounds great. I'll include that in the email I'm sending out. But yeah, just back to you for any final thoughts, and let us know where people can find you.
Well, the best place, as we met on LinkedIn. I mean, I'm LinkedIn a lot, so LinkedIn and Positive Change Leader. I'm also on Facebook, and also a positive change leader. And my email is also a good place. That's Duncan@bemoreyou.
I shall include it in the email. Yeah,
Be More You.
Yeah.
Those are the best places.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll bring the recording to a close now. Do stick around for a little while. Okay. So Duncan, thank you so much for joining us here today. I always enjoy talking to you, and I always come away feeling uplifted, and I know that people will too. People have enjoyed listening to you too. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. So just before I close off, just to say next week, I'm actually going to be doing a little solo episode. So that'll be an opportunity for me to respond to any questions that you may have. So please feel free to get in touch either by email, or you can make a contribution through the link that I include in all of my emails. And next week's subject, I'll be talking about acceptance, which is often misunderstood to be quite a submissive act. But actually, I'm going to be talking about acceptance as a really powerful approach to life. So yeah, I'll be here by myself, and I would love for you to join me. Thank you for everybody who's been here today, and thank you to everybody who's watched the recording. Thank you again, Duncan, and I'll see you next week.